Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we find out former Congressman Dana Rohrabacher was at the January 6th insurrection. I'm sure he would have gotten his way in if he could. They're trying to backpedal on that. Also, a couple from Virginia, they've pled guilty to misdemeanor charges. They face up to 6 months in jail and a $5,000 fine. Here's the thing. I don't think that's enough. That seems like a slap in the wrist to me. But I guess they're the third and fourth people to plead guilty. So the early things, it looks like they're going to be getting off with a slap on the wrist, which I think is the wrong message to send. Anyway, the big news today, Merrick Garland, our attorney general, has come out with a national strategy on how we combat domestic terrorism. Yes, the white supremacists. Yes, the white nationalists. Yes, the Oath Keeper groups. All those, as we were talking about at the beginning, all of those folks who have made our lives very, very, well, troublesome. I guess an interesting, as George Carlin would say. I'm here to share some thoughts on Merrick Garland's statements today. I have asked our good friend Renato Mariotti to come talk with us. Renato's a former federal prosecutor and host of the On Topic podcast. Renato, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So let's start with the guilty pleas. 6 months and $5,000 at the maximum. Is that enough?
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's in this case, I don't think it's enough. But as a practical matter, when you look at other sentences for similar offenses, it's the sort of thing that is a typical sentence for this type of conduct. I do think that it is sending a message to the others that it's time to plead and try to cut a deal.
No.
So I'm not surprised by it. But it's, look, this was an attack on our Capitol. It has a broader significance than just trespassing. But the crimes that were actually charged were, in many cases, very narrow.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if they'd have stole the peppermint patty in Philadelphia, they'd be spending 500 days in jail like the poor guy here who was just waiting for a trial because he couldn't get a bond. Something seriously wrong with our judicial system. Just my thought. That is where it is. Let's move along to Merrick Garland's announcements today. Is this a big deal?
You know, I think so because, look, we had 4 years of a presidency and an administration that at times was inciting violence, at times was inciting giving comfort to domestic terrorists. We all, I think, remember in the debate stage when Trump wouldn't denounce the Proud Boys, right? So now we moved it from that to an administration that really for the first time is saying domestic terrorism, not Al-Qaeda, right? We had a prior president who was very focused on that, but domestic terrorism is an important priority, and there's a national strategy for dealing with it, and that includes making sure that people who are employed by the government don't share kin with or aid and comfort to those domestic terrorists.
No, in our military as well. I mean, it's one of those things. But you listen to the right wing. No, well, it's just being woke. The woke people are leading the military because we don't want people with racist identities and ideologies in our military. Somehow that's the woke agenda.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the right, I will just say anyone on the right who thinks that this policy is targeting them needs to look in the mirror and really think about, why do they think they would get mixed up with domestic terrorists? And the fact of the matter is that white nationalism, white supremacy is tied up with a lot of these domestic terrorist movements. And to the extent that there's dog whistles going out to that crowd, I think these folks need to ask themselves, are they, directly or indirectly aiding these people?
Yeah, I mean, but, as I started off the show with today, I said, look, none of this stuff is new. I remember, my first memory of these kind of domestic terror groups were the Oath or something like that, the people who murdered Alan Berg in Denver back in 84. And then you had McVeigh, who blew up the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. He was part of that underground militia group, those militia groups. This stuff isn't new, but they just seem to They seem to stick around, and we seem to be okay with it. And I remember back during the Obama years when Janet Napolitano came out and said, look, these are domestic terrorists, and the right lost their ever-loving freaking minds.
Yeah, I'll tell you, they at this point, they're losing their mind over just about everything. And I actually think that one of the things that's made the Biden administration effective is that instead of being very responsive to criticism from the right, they're doing their own thing. And really, they have not given the right much to work with. I mean, they're getting upset about going after domestic terrorists. I remember when Republicans used to be all about combating terrorism. It's interesting how now that we're focused on domestic terrorists, the right is suddenly concerned about that.
Yeah, I need Rick Santorum to come out and say white Christian terrorist.
Yeah, right. I will say that. You know, this is we really are going to have trouble undoing this last 4 years and some of the long-term damage that's been caused. And I think that this focus on domestic terrorism is important because it is a problem that we aren't focusing on enough. I mean, the fact that we had an attack on the Capitol is one thing, but you can imagine a more planned out, more deadly insurrection in the future.
Yeah. Now, how do you see this rolling? I mean, it's one thing to have this announcement say we're going to go after domestic terrorism because, you know, it's going to get a headline. We're going to get people talking about it. What does that actually mean? You know, as a former federal prosecutor, how would you go after this? How do you see Merrick Garland actually, you know, hitting the road running with this? As I said, it's easy to have a policy. How's this going to roll out? What do you see the policy moving forward being?
You know, practically speaking, every time there's a new Justice Department, there's different priorities. And those end up trickling down to prosecutors across the country. You know, there were times when during the Obama administration when healthcare fraud was a big priority, when making sure that we were changing the way we were seeking drug sentences to try to have more equity in sentencing was a priority. All these things trickle down to thousands of DOJ employees and prosecutors across the country, and I think what will happen is investigations are going to get launched at the local level of, you know, local groups, cells, whatever, that are connected to this movement. So I do think it'll have an impact. It's not going to, you know, there's not going to be some button that's going to be pressed that's going to automatically end domestic terrorism, but I do think we're going to see more investigations, we're going to see more action, and I think you're going to ultimately see a national strategy. I mean, they are having the State Department involved. It was said in that policy address today, so you really could see a national strategy, public, international relations strategy, you know, that's part of that as well.
Yeah, so should we be preparing ourselves for the next, you know, Waco, for the next Ruby Ridge? Because, look, at the end of the day, these terror groups, in a lot of places, they're as well armed or if not better armed than law enforcement and hell, you know, probably our National Guard.
Yeah, I think so. And frankly, one thing that I liked about the policy is it calls out the violence being the main issue here, which really means, as far as I'm concerned, that it really raises the issue of guns and, you know, the fact that assault rifles, for example, assault weapons are so easy to, you know, to be obtained by folks. So I do think so. And, you know, we have a more permissive culture in terms of open carry and concealed carry than we ever have in the past. So,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is.
No, I just had a conversation with a friend and I've said, you know, look, I grew up in a housing project. I never felt the need to have a gun. I live in the country now and I got a shotgun. Because you never know who lives around you, and that I think for me that's a big statement.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, there have been times in my life where, you know, when I remember I spent a year when I was working for a judge living in Texas when you had to be careful because about, you know, how you acted towards other people you were interacting in public because a lot of people were carrying, and I do think you know, as a practical matter. You know, folks who are, you know, open carrying assault weapons are doing so in part because they want to intimidate others. And that's what we've seen a lot of times at these, you know, gatherings that are, you know, related to white nationalism or related to domestic terrorism is that they're using open carry of assault weapons to further their agenda of intimidation and fear. So very concerning.
Yeah, but with our gun laws, sadly, you know, none of this stuff changes. And you can see, you know, it's my view, you can see the right using this to ramp up that kind of, you know, that kind of, you know, fear, the fervor, that hatred. And I already have people telling me, oh, Biden's coming after my guns. And I'm going, well, if you commit a crime, you're right. He's going to come after them. But I don't see it otherwise. But you commit a crime like breaking into our Capitol. You shouldn't have a gun.
Yeah, no kidding. I have to say that one of the scariest things about that were people who were ex-military with, you know, zip ties to tie people's hands, things like that, right? People with gallows. You know, we've seen outside of the Capitol insurrection plenty of gatherings where you have, you know, folks, for example, at the Michigan Capitol with weapons.
Yeah.
So I do think you really have, treating this as domestic terrorism, calling it domestic terrorism is itself a significant step, because you're treating it as the sort of crime. Terrorism is the sort of thing that is, you know, we have huge resources that are devoted to anti-terrorism in the FBI, for example. So just in labeling this is terrorism and going after it as terrorism, I think, is a significant move.
Yeah, but here's my problem. I go back to where we started on this. The first question I asked you, you think the sentence that these folks were possibly going to get, and I don't think they're going to get the maximum. I think a slap on the wrist is coming. So you can call it domestic terrorism, but if you're going to slap them on the wrist, what does that matter?
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I think, though, the thing that is important to note is that people who were getting 6 months were not charged with terrorism. They're charged with entering public property without authorization. Very different thing. And, you know, those crimes are easy to charge. They're easy for prosecutors to prove. That's why they charge them. And, you know, ultimately, Garland has said, for example, and Ray, that there's going to be some conspiracy type charges that are levied if there is a broader conspiracy that's charged against certain folks. Maybe not everybody was there, but against folks that they have sufficient evidence. Then I do think a broader sentence is appropriate, or a heavier sentence is appropriate. But the punishment has to match the crime, and that is exactly the crime that fits charge.
So you think there's going to be somebody who's going to get a big sentence out of this? Someone's going to be the example.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's DOJ 101, right? They call it general deterrence. You go after one guy as a big ringleader, you make an example out of him. And hope that sends a message to everyone else.
Yeah, and hopefully everyone else sells him out. And when he's the last guy to be sold out, it's the one who holds the bag. Yeah, I get that. But I'd still like to see them all sitting in a wing of their own, singing the national anthem and the Star Spangled Banner, as we've heard reports of some of them doing as they're organizing. I wanted to get your thoughts on the story yesterday that this John Demers, top Justice Department national security official, resigned over the reports that the former guys, the former administration, subpoenaed the phone records of reporters, and they're saying at least two dozen Democrats in Congress. Is this the guy who's falling on the sword? How far do you think this goes into the former guys' Justice Department?
Well, I think it merits a full-blown investigation, and I'm glad that the OIG is investigating, the Inspector General is investigating, because, you know, frankly, journalists are our watchguard. They're the ones watching the government. I don't know about you, Rick, but I don't really trust the government. I don't trust, I'm a DOJ alum, but I don't trust the government to always act responsibly and appropriately. I think after living through the Trump administration, no one should. And, you know, I think we need to have heightened concern about the abuse of, law enforcement powers against journalists, who in many ways are our final line of defense against tyranny. So I'm very concerned about that, and against, you know, whether it shifts while others had family members, a minor, for example. Obviously, you know, it wasn't the most intrusive type of surveillance. It wasn't like they were getting wiretapped or something like that, where there was the content of their communications was taken. But nonetheless, there was really no good reason for them to be subpoenaing you know, 100 plus records from 100 plus people when they weren't going to make a case. I mean, this was essentially, leaks of information to the House Intelligence Committee on matters of national concern. There was no way they were going to get a conviction from a jury on something like that. It really looks very politicized, and I think we need to figure out how to root out politicization in the Justice Department, because, frankly, if we don't, if we can't deal with that, I think, you know, we will not be able to have sort of a bipartisan, nonpartisan respect for the rule of law going forward.
No, I'm with you. But do we know that they didn't do anything above and beyond just getting that information? Do we actually know what they did with that information, that they didn't attempt some kind of wiretap, that they didn't extrapolate that to other information? Do we know any of that?
We don't know. We don't know that they didn't. We don't have any evidence that they did. So, in other words, what we know so far is what I said. In other words, they subpoenaed phone records and, you know, things like that, metadata, things of that nature. That's problematic. It looks to me to like it was politically motivated. That's obviously something we should be concerned about. It would have a whole new level of concern on my end if they misled a judge into getting a wire, a signature for a wiretap. So I think this merits investigation is something we should be concerned about. And I think there needs to be oversight and, you know, potentially some serious reform of the Justice Department. Because, look, I'm all for, you know, I think it's great that President Biden has tried to, you know, make a new independent Justice Department. But he's not going to be president forever. Merrick Garland's not going to be attorney general forever. I don't think Merrick Garland is spying on Congress. But I do think. So we need to have some structural reform so we can feel confident in the future that our tax dollars aren't being used to abuse the power and try to, you know, advance a political agenda via law enforcement.
Yeah, no, I'm with you right there. And with like you, I don't trust the government. I trust corporate America even less. I'm of the Reagan mindset. I'll trust, but we verify. And that's what I think investigative journalists should be doing. It's why we need reporters and watchdogs to be keeping an eye on them. It's why I say all the time, I trust government more than corporate America, because at least they have to stand for before me every 2, 4, or 6 years and tell me why I need to vote for them. That's the difference.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think, you know, frankly, one of the things that I feel good about during the Trump years was the way the independent press, despite being attacked and threatened by Trump and his supporters, nonetheless, were acting as a watchdog for us. That's why I care a lot about this potential abuse of power, using law enforcement against the press in particular.
Right there with you. Renato, I appreciate the time and the thoughts, the information. Good stuff, as always. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks again, Rick.
Good stuff, Renato Mariotti. Make sure you check out the podcast On Topic, wherever you get your podcasts. It's good stuff. Renato's a good guy. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.